immensely grateful to be with all of you today. My special gratitude to Holiness Sanchinayana Swami Maharaj for gathering here. By the ropes of his affection and his kindness, I was a helpless prisoner, brought here to Golokata. Thank you, Lord. And as I'm seeing all of you, I'm feeling very happy and very sad and very happy in my sadness and very sad in my sadness. Because seeing Sanchinayana Maharaj and all of you is bringing me great joy, but not seeing our dear Sadanandi Devi, I'm feeling very sad in separation. From the first times I began to come to Germany to visit with Sanchinayana Maharaj, she was always right there with a very simple and loving heart, serving her Guru Maharaj, serving Srila Prabhupada, serving all the devotees. So incredibly dedicated. And utilizing all of the beautiful talents she has fully with all her heart to please the devotees. And I would sometimes observe with great happiness how His Holiness Sanchinayana Maharaj would be so pleased with her efforts. He counted on her in so many ways. Because us Swamis are sometimes pretty spaced out. And it's really such a great blessing to have people who are really devoted and efficient, eager to selflessly serve. And practically wherever I was in the world, if I needed to get in touch with Sanchinayana Maharaj, she would always be the connecting bridge. Yes?
Yeah.
And I remember one time when she was very ill in the hospital and it didn't look like she would survive. I called her on the phone. And all she wanted to go for was to serve. She was willing to live to serve or die to serve. Human life is not, as Shukadeva Goswami describes in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's not so much valued by the duration of years that we live, but it is valued by the quality in which we utilize every moment that we have. Knowing the body to be Krishna's property, it is our sacred duty to keep it fit as long as we can, to be engaged in Krishna's loving service. I learned this from my very dear friend Radharaja Prabhu. But still, however nice we take care, our life is a flash. Srila Prabhupada was in the redwood forests of California, where just about a week and a half ago I was there with my dear godbrothers, Shamsundar Prabhu and Vaisheshika Prabhu, We were walking through the Muir woods, ancient, ancient redwood trees. Some of them are 1,000 years old. Some of them are 2,000 years old. And one of them, just about a week before we arrived, fell down. It's a huge redwood tree, well over 1,000 years, that just fell. And when a redwood tree falls, it's a very traumatic experience for anybody close by, because they're really high and really wide. And as the three of us were standing there looking at this fallen redwood tree, thinking, it lived about 1,000 years and eventually died just like the rest of us. And I was thinking, will this be in the history books, that the redwood tree died at 1,000 years old? But yet, great personalities. Jesus Christ only lived 32 years. Shankaracharya lived 31 years. Lord Chaitanya only 48 years. But even centuries later, the quality of their lives are still inspiring our hearts to reach out for the highest perfection. In the invocation today, we chanted this beautiful, popular verse, "Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu." When we say "Hey," we are meant to be crying out like Draupadi, "Hey Krishna, Hey Govinda," in a sense of urgency, in a sense of need, like a baby crying for mother. When Draupadi was being stripped naked, a fate worse than death, in that court of the Kauravas, and she realized no one could help her, she threw her arms in the air and took shelter. "Hey Krishna, Hey Govinda." And Govinda appeared. Krishna is always eager to appear and give us shelter according to how we surrender to Him. And Krishna is an ocean of kindness. "Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu." The most important truths are things that we cannot centrally perceive. The most important truths are revealed and understood by faith. Not blind faith, but deep, true faith. In the words of God, in the words of the scriptures, in the words of the great acharyas. When a great person, a sincere, humble, dedicated person like Sadanandi leaves this world, from a sensual perspective, she's gone. And we are sad because the body, which was the medium by which we could relate to somebody, is no longer with us. Narottam Das Thakur, he sings his beautiful song to the departed Vaishnavas. Jaya Nilo Prema Dana. He's praying, Karuna Pracho. He's beating his head against the rock in separation from the departed devotees. Now, some neophyte could go up and say, Narottam Prabhu, they're not their bodies. Why are you crying? Yes? But he's crying. In fact, it describes in the Narottam Vilas, when Srinivas Acharya, the very, very dearest friend of Narottam Das, when he departed from this world, Thakur Narottam ran into the forest, didn't eat or sleep, he simply cried for days and days and days, alone. Narottam Das Thakur, he knew that Srinivas Acharya had gone back home, back to Godhead. So from that perspective, it's a time of celebration. It's a time to rejoice. But still, as a person, the body is the means by which we can communicate in a very, very special way. And that is why the body of Vaishnavas is very sacred. And that's why it is actually a time of both celebration and mourning when a devotee departs. Celebration because we know that person is with Krishna, who is Karuna Sindhu, who is an ocean of mercy. Not like the oceans of this world. Because this ocean of Krishna's kindness has no bottom and has no shores. It is unlimited. Its depth is forever. Its breadth and width is forever. It's infinite. And how can anything that's infinite, that has no boundaries, expand? It's impossible. Because Krishna's mercy is inconceivable, achyuta, it's ever expanding. It has no bottom, but it keeps getting deeper. It has no shores, but it keeps getting wider and longer. Yes, we know when a devotee is sincere that Krishna has taken that devotee in his loving embrace. Because Krishna is an ocean of kindness. And Krishna manifests this kindness in a very special way in this world through the devotees, through the hearts of the devotees. That is why Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Sastrapa, Lavamatra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva City Work. Even a moment's association with sincere devotees can open the doors to the highest liberation. As Srimad Bhagavatam tells us that achievement of even the great wealth of the King of Heaven, or any wealth, or any power, achievement of all the eight mystic cities where we can perform incredible miracles, achievement of mukti, liberation from all sufferings. None of these things can even compare like an ocean, like a drop to an ocean, even a moment's association with a devotee. Because a devotee carries Krishna in his or her heart. And Krishna, that ocean of mercy, is eager to manifest to the heart of the devotee. What greater happiness could there possibly be than being an instrument of that ocean of mercy of Krishna? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that was his incarnation in this world. Radha Bhava Duti Subalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. Srimati Radharani Krishna wanted to taste the sweetness of her love, so he came with her heart, with her complexion, eager to give her love to the whole world. And he's calling upon all the devotees for this Paramupakara, to perform the highest welfare work by just allowing his mercy to flow through us. Srila Prabhupada he manifested that mercy in an infinitely special way. You see, our parampara, it's a parampara of knowledge, but the culmination, the essence of all knowledge is compassion and love. Where there is love of God, it manifests in this world as compassion for all beings. But let us examine just one instant of how this parampara of compassion came to us, each and every one of us, personally. We'll begin in 1965. Friday the 13th of August, when Srila Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta in the King George Dockyards of Calcutta. He had 40 rupees. I don't know if he knew or not, but you could not change rupees anywhere outside of India. So he had nothing. It was expected to be 38 days from Calcutta to New York, his destination. He boarded the ship all alone. He was 69 years old, and only a few days later was going to be his 70th birthday. He walked up an old plank of an old ship. I was saying recently in the talk how I met one of the captains of that freight line company, the Scindia ships. And he was good friends with Captain Pandey, who was Prabhupada's captain. And I asked him, did you ever sail on the Jaladuta? He said the Jaladuta was so old that soon after Prabhupada sailed on it, they retired it. So he wasn't on a very nice, new, luxury liner like some of us are used to seeing. It was just an old freight ship. What is interesting is I believe it was within the first 10 days of his voyage, when he was somewhere in the middle of the Arabian Sea, he became intensely seasick. Have any of you ever been intensely seasick? Please raise your hands. It's unbearable. I was once on a friend's boat in Hawaii. I always wanted to be on his boat. And I became intensely seasick. And there were sharks in the water. And we were a long way from shore. And I jumped into the water because I wouldn't mind being eaten by sharks as much as that seasickness. And it threw me a life raft, and I just stayed outside the boat holding onto the lifesaver as he pulled me to the shore. Well, here was Srila Prabhupada, 70 years old, intensely seasick in the middle of the Arabian Sea. And then it culminated with him getting a heart attack. And then another heart attack. Now, all of you are relatively young. Even Sachinanda Maharaj and myself are relatively younger than that. At least for now. But can you imagine, 70 years old, on a cargo ship, there's no doctor, there's no nurse, there's no medicine. He's in the middle of this ocean, and he just had two heart attacks, and he's seasick, and he's laying there. And found something to meditate on. He still had about 30 days more before he could get off the boat. Because it's not that the ship could just turn around and go back to Calcutta. It wasn't like that. And he had no money. And the only country in the entire planet he had a visa for was America. It's not that he could just get off in Africa or Europe and just rest for some time. No, he couldn't get off that ship till he reached New York. Now for us, we're traveling, we get sick, we get off at the next destination, take a plane back to our house. For that, for Prabhupada, that was impossible. He had, Krishna gave him two choices, either live to New York or die on the way. But there was no stops in between. There was no doctors that were going to come on board. So just put yourself in this position. You're 70 years old. You're seasick as anything. You just had two major heart attacks. And you're on a cargo ship. And you have 30 days to go. With nothing and no one. And when you reach New York, you don't know if anyone's even going to be there to greet you. And the Arabian Sea is a peaceful sea. He still had to cross the Atlantic, which is notorious among sailors as the roughest sea. The Titanic sunk in the Atlantic. Not to speak of the Jaladutta. Srila Prabhupada he just gave his heart, his life to Krishna. He writes in his diary how he's feeling so much separation from Vrindavan and his beloved lords, Radha Damodar, Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda Dev, Radha Gopinath, and all the devotees. In that condition, where it was actually, from a material perspective, it was completely hopeless. Srila Prabhupada had a dream where Krishna and his various incarnations all appeared to him, and he saw that they were personally taking charge of the boat of Jaladutta to bring him to New York. And from that time on, the voyage was completely peaceful. His health was being restored. There were no storms. The ocean was smooth. Captain Pandey and his wife said, "We have never crossed the Atlantic in being so smooth and nice. It's always rough, but this is the first and only time it wasn't." And Srila Prabhupada told us, he wrote, "If the Atlantic Ocean was anything like it always is, it would have been impossible for him to survive." But he saw Krishna with his various incarnations all come together to take charge of that ship and bring him across the ocean. When Srila Prabhupada came to New York, then later to San Francisco, and then later around the planet Earth about 12 times, Srila Prabhupada had come in that parampara, the ocean of kindness. For all of us, we're drowning in the ocean of material existence. He came with Krishna in all the incarnations and invited us onto this boat. A human form of life is considered a boat. Material existence is considered an ocean. The Vedic knowledge is like the breezes. And the spiritual master is like the captain of the ship. Yes, when Prabhupada was in the most desperate human condition possible, Krishna was there to bring him. And Srila Prabhupada came to all of us, and he's still coming to all of us through his books, through his tapes, through his devotees, to carry us across the ocean. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Prayag, another very holy place of water where the Ganga, Yamuna and Saraswati meet. He was met by Rupa Goswami, who composed this beautiful prayer. Namo Mahavaranyaya Krishna Prema Parayati Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Kodakeshema. And Krishna is all merciful. But Krishna has come as Lord Chaitanya and manifested greater quantity and quality of magnanimity and causes mercy than even Krishna. Because he's making that ocean of kindness so accessible to everyone and anyone. Yeah. How Lord Chaitanya cared for the devotees. How Lord Chaitanya cared for every living being. We read when he first took sannyas and was going to Puri. Why did he go to Puri? His life's burning yearning was to go to Vrindavan. And after he took sannyas, he ran to Vrindavan. And there were a few devotees with him, running after him. He was dancing, he was singing, he was intoxicated in ecstasy of love of God. I'm going to Vrindavan, finally. After he took initiation, he was running to Vrindavan. And the demigods spoke to him and said, please wait. You've descended to this world to establish the Harinam Sankirtan movement in Navadvip. You could go to Vrindavan some other time. So he went to Navadvip instead and established this movement that is meant to deliver anyone and everyone by simply calling out the names of Krishna with selfless devotion. And after he took sannyas, all his worldly social responsibilities were finished. He was running to Vrindavan. But Nityananda Prabhu knew his heart. His real heart was he cared for his devotees more than even himself. And he went to Shantipur. And Sachimata and the devotees said, don't go to Vrindavan. Go to Puri. Because the same Krishna that's in Vrindavan is in form of Jagannath in Puri. Yes. He decided to go to Puri instead. Because he cared so much about the happiness of his devotees. And on his way, Nityananda Prabhu broke his danda for esoteric reasons. You are the Supreme Lord. What are you doing holding a danda, which represents renunciation? You're the Supreme Enjoyer. I don't like to see this renunciation side of you. He was thinking this and broke the danda and threw it in the river. Lord Chaitanya, he said, that danda, I must set an example for others. That's my only possession. Either you go before me or after me, but I'm not going to Puri with you. See how respectful he was. They said, no, you go first, we'll go after you. And with the same enthusiasm, he was running to Vrindavan. He was, when he saw the chakra on top of Jagannath's temple, he was moving so fast to see Jagannath, his beloved Krishna, so eager. He describes that it seemed like he prays himself, what he feels when he's in separation from Krishna. Yugayatam nimeshena chakshusha pravrishayatam sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahe. My Lord Govinda, in your absence, I'm feeling a moment to be 12 years or more. Nimesh. A nimesh, according to the Shastra, is the amount of time when you unwillingly blink your eyes. The time when the upper eyelid touches the lower eyelid is a nimesh. Now, how many times have you blinked so far? You don't. Have you even noticed you blinked? When you blink, you don't even see any darkness. It happens so fast, yes? It's just a steady vision, despite all these blinks. The Lord Chaitanya is saying, when Krishna's standing before you, and this is the gopis too, the gopis are, they're saying Brahma is a very, very ineffective creator. Because he made these eyelids. And when we're looking at Krishna, we have to blink. And it seems literally, not figuratively or poetically, it seems like 12 years, that nimesh. Well, Lord Chaitanya, the Buddha, the greatest of the gopis, Sri Radha, was so eager to see Lord Jagannath that even though it was only a few miles away, it seemed like thousands and thousands of miles. It was walking fast, but it seemed to be taking forever. And finally, he entered Jagannath's temple, and from a distance, he saw Lord Jagannath. And these two dynamic principles of Vipralamba and Sambhog are inseparable feelings in the path of bhakti. Separation makes the meeting infinitely more pleasurable on a spiritual level. And the meeting makes the separation intensely more ecstatic when it comes. So his separation, when he saw Lord Jagannath from a distance, he lost all external consciousness, ran with full speed to embrace Lord Jagannath. But when he came close, his ecstasy went beyond the limits and he fell unconscious. All life symptoms ceased. The guards were, they didn't know what to do. They were going to just pick him up and throw him out. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was there by the arrangement of the Lord. He took the Lord to his home and realized that this person is in a state of transcendental samadhi, spiritual perfection of some sort. And when the devotees came and chanted, the Lord came to life again. Interestingly, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he believed in a philosophy that was completely contrary to what Lord Chaitanya was teaching. He was a Mayavadi. How did Lord Chaitanya treat him? He treated him with such honor and respect. He may not have honored and respected his philosophy, but he honored and respected him as a person. Because he was seeing that every living thing is part of Krishna. How could you not love and respect every living thing if you love Krishna? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told Lord Chaitanya that you should not go into Jagannath's temple alone. Whenever you go in the temple, you should stand behind the Garuda Stamba. How many of you have been inside Jagannath's temple? Raise your hand. I see only people of Indian origin. How far behind the altar, or in front of the altar, is the Garuda Stamba? Quite a long distance?
Yeah. Very. When I was a small boy, I could go right inside. But nowadays they don't allow inside. So now I don't remember. I remember when I saw it as a child. But now I don't know the distance exactly because now they don't allow you to go inside.
Oh, they don't allow us to go inside at all. But the Garuda Stamba, according to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra here, then there is the Jagamohan, which is the Kirtan Hall. And behind the Jagamohan, where thousands of people go, then there's the Garuda Stamba. For the rest of Lord Chaitanya's life, for the next 24 years, every time he went in the temple, except on very, very rare intimate occasions, he always stood beside the Garuda Stamba, a distance away. He honored Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wish. To show the heart of a Vaishnava. Because Lord Chaitanya came to show how to live according to being a devotee. He took the role. Garuda is a great devotee. When Lord Chaitanya wanted to teach us, if we want to see Jagannath, we should always be at the side of a devotee, getting the blessings of the devotee. And he also wanted to show how he respected others. A Mayavadi told him to stand there, and he stood there every time he went in the temple. And he went in the temple several times every day. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he argued with Gopinathacharya, his brother-in-law, that Lord Chaitanya cannot be Krishna, he cannot be God. He's just a young, inexperienced sannyasi. And if I don't protect him, he will fall down. Gopinathacharya was so angry with Sarvabhauma. When Gopinathacharya told Lord Chaitanya what Sarvabhauma was saying, Lord Chaitanya said, you should be kind and loving to him, because after all, whatever his philosophy, he's treating me like a father to a son. He wants to protect me. I want his protection. And one day Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya told Lord Chaitanya that you are in an inferior sampradaya of sannyas, of a swami. I will initiate you and educate you to a higher. And another day he told him, that unless you understand the philosophy of Vedanta, you will not survive. Because you're so young. I will protect you by teaching you Vedanta. And Lord Chaitanya said, please teach me Vedanta. And every day, for the next 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, from morning till night, taught Lord Chaitanya Vedanta. And Lord Chaitanya said to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you are my father, you are my guru, you are my protector, please teach me. And Sarvabhauma taught me. And Lord Chaitanya patiently heard with great, great respect every day, saying, you are my guru, continue your talks. And after 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked, why you haven't said a single word? I don't know if you understand or not. You haven't asked any questions. Do you have any questions? Have you understood? And the Lord said, I understand. Vedanta Sutra is very simple to understand. It's like going out in the sun at noontime. But your explanations are like a dark cloud that completely obscure the true meaning. Now please understand, if he said that to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya at the beginning, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would have cut him off completely. But because he respected and honored Sarvabhauma and listened to him, he totally conquered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's heart by his humility, by his respect, by his character. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, no one has ever said like this to me. I'm the greatest teacher in the whole world. Even the king is my disciple. He said, if you have a better idea, then tell me. Lord Chaitanya said, oh, I will. And because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had to hear, because Lord Chaitanya heard him, and because he loved Lord Chaitanya, his heart was so totally open to him, that when Lord Chaitanya spoke the truth, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya completely transformed. I was just in Bhagavad Dharma Prabhu's house, and there's a beautiful murti of Sat Puja. Is it your murti, Maharaj?
I'm his. Yes, he's.
A personal Ishtadeva and worshipable master of Satchinanda Swami Maharaj. And that's Sat Puja, the Lord with six arms. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed a similar Sat Puja form to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, where he was showing that I'm Ram, I'm Krishna, and now I'm Lord Chaitanya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya surrendered his life, his soul, his everything. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was his method? He really cared about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understood that and therefore opened his heart completely to receive Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That was, in truth, Srila Prabhupada's way of spreading Krishna consciousness. When Srila Prabhupada got off that ship, Jaladuta, after 38 days at seas, almost 20 days after his heart attacks, he got off the boat, he didn't know if anyone was going to be there or not, and there was some stranger, just some American man, just said, you are Swami, come. Put him on a bus. And Prabhupada was just, it's about a 10-hour bus ride. Right off the boat, you just put on a bus all alone. your magic. And he arrives in Butler, Pennsylvania, in the middle of the night. And I've spoken to Sally Agarwal, who was Prabhupada's host. And her husband, Gopal, all the time he would meet different people and say, please send them a sponsorship for America. And they never came. But just like a day before Prabhupada's boat arrived, she got a message, some kind of telegram or something, or a letter, that said, I'm arriving on the Jaladuta on this day in New York. So he couldn't go there. He didn't have time, so he just called his traveler's aide and said, you know, I'll pay you. Just go and pick him up and put him on a bus. In the middle of the night, I think he was in a van of some sort, picked up Prabhupada and drove him home. And a day or so later, we put him in the YMCA hotel, which is usually where the poorest kind of people stay. You know, when you travel, how many of you stay in YMCA or YWCA hotels? It's usually for people who, usually street people in America, at least during the 60s when I was young. When you were a beggar in the street, if you could beg enough money, then you check into the YMCA hotel. That's where they put him. And Prabhupada was very happy. He said, it's a very nice room. He didn't have his own bathroom. He had to share it with all these other people. And he had to walk about 8 blocks to get to the Agarwal house to cook. And then he went back to New York. Sally Agarwal, she was a Christian lady. She said, I can't think that I've ever loved any man as much as I've loved him. But she never became a devotee. She'd probably go back to Godhead, but in this life, she never got initiated. She never started chanting Hare Krishna. But she loved Prabhupada, and Prabhupada loved her for who she was and what she was. And she just wanted to serve Prabhupada. Even when Prabhupada was in New York, he used to send her letters. Please send my books here. When Prabhupada wanted to leave Butler, Pennsylvania, he said, I'm going to New York, because there's no worldwide mission you could stay in. Could start in Butler, Pennsylvania. And she was so worried, Swami's going to New York. This is impossible. Where's he going to stay? Who's he going to be with? And he's so old. She gave him a little bit of money. Because he had nothing for his bus trip to New York. And she cried. Because he just cared so much for everyone. And he was in the Bowery and met Dr. Mishra, who helped a lot, and just being kind, reciprocation of kindness. Dr. Mishra was a Mayavadi too, philosophically, and Prabhupada and him would have very heavy debates. When Dr. Mishra was sick, Prabhupada was at his bedside day and night. He was cooking for him and caring for him. And Dr. Mishra said, Prabhupada's love and his food saved my life. Care. And then somehow or other they started this little storefront, 26 Second Avenue, which is about 1/4 the size of this room. And that was it. A rundown little storefront. In the Lower East Side of New York. And people started coming. And the people who were coming, they were not following any principles. They were coming with boyfriends and girlfriends. They were coming intoxicated on marijuana, LSD, alcohol. eating anything and everything. Most of them that were coming hadn't bathed in weeks. And here is the greatest of the saints of Vrindavan living with them. Can you imagine? And he just cared about them. They couldn't even figure out what he was talking about. He was quoting Sanskrit. They just loved him. And most of the original devotees, whatever Prabhupada said, they were willing to accept. Because he cared so much. He was such a loving saint. That ocean of mercy, Karuna Sindhu, was flowing through him, unrestrictedly, incessantly. And it was drowning them. And by the time they understood, they just opened their hearts to the philosophy, and it just made so much sense. And it was so comprehensive and so inclusive and so satisfying. Hayagriva Prabhu was one of the first people that came. He was an English professor. And he just happened to say to Srila Prabhupada, I'm an English professor. Prabhupada said, do you know editing? And Hayagriva Prabhu said, yes, I know editing so much. He said, will you edit something for me? And Hayagriva was expecting one or two pages. But Prabhupada was so kind, he was so caring, he was so loving. Hayagriva Prabhu didn't even know the philosophy yet. But he loved Prabhupada. So he went up to Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada said, I'll give you... He was expecting one or two pages to edit. Prabhupada opened up a trunk and took out a stack of papers this big, tied up with rope, with this rope. It was probably 1,000 pages. And Prabhupada just gave it to him and said, you can start with this. And then Prabhupada opens some other trunks. He says, when you get done, I have these two. Now here's someone, he didn't even know what the philosophy was. He just met Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's engaging him in a lifetime of service. And Hayagriva said, yes, Swamiji, I'll do it, you know. Lord Chaitanya's way. Srila Prabhupada embodied that in such a beautiful way. And these people, many of them came from very, very wealthy families. And they had rejected their families. That was the way the counterculture was in those days. Looking for something higher. And most of all, rebelling against authority. Counterculture was about that. We had a mission statement. Never trust anyone over 30. Because they just don't understand. And that's the way we felt. Yes, Mara? One of our leaders. And here was somebody, these people are all in their, most of them are teenagers. Some are in their early 20s. And here's somebody who's now 71 years old. And you're not supposed to trust anybody over 30. And he didn't give them anything except love. He had nothing else to give. Did you ever hear the stories of how Prabhupada would feed people in the early days? He had no money to feed them. Before he had 26 Second Avenue, I met somebody recently. And he was telling me that he met Srila Prabhupada in some venue. And Prabhupada said, would you like me to cook for you? The person said, yes, yes. So Prabhupada took him to a grocery store, and he had to buy the food, because Prabhupada had nothing. So Prabhupada picked out the food, and this man's coming. And Prabhupada didn't want to waste his money, so he got to the cash register, and the lady goes, and then the receipt comes out. She said, that will be $10. And Srila Prabhupada said, I'll give you $5. Already never saw anyone with saffron robes and a shaved head. She said, what? He said, it's not worth $10. Now in a grocery store with cash registers in America, nobody has ever said this in history. Never before or since. She said, sir, that's not the way we do things here. He said, no, I can get it somewhere else for this much and this much. And she said, well, go there. He said, no, I want to get it here. And I was so, but he said it with such love and kindness and such respect for her. This is just an American lady in a cash register, but Prabhupada was so respectful to her in his negotiations that she opened up her purse and took out from her own purse $5 and put it in the cash register and said, you take it for $5. And she paid the rest. And this person's telling me all about it. And then Prabhupada went up to his apartment and used his pots, washed them out or something, and then cooked a feast, and then served the feast. And then he taught this person to lay on his left side after he fed him so much. And then Prabhupada just told him the philosophy. The person said, whatever he said, all I could do was say yes, of course. Because he was so kind, he was so respectful. Prabhupada defeated people. But he defeated people like Lord Chaitanya defeated people, both philosophically and from the heart. And when 22nd Avenue came, people were coming. And the only thing, the only prasad Prabhupada had to give him is someone would donate an apple. And however many people in the audience there was, Srila Prabhupada would cut the apple in that many pieces. He would count and then cut it and give everyone a piece of apple. That was it. And these people were willing to give their lives, their everything, to serve him. Before they even understood what he taught. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Because that ocean of mercy was flooding their lives through. And when they heard the philosophy and their hearts were open to receive it, nothing that they could ever conceive of. So perfect. Today, Satchinandan Maharaj was telling me about Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He said, in a religion that is materially oriented influences people with fear and hope. But when religion actually takes its transcendental form, people are inspired with love and a desire to serve. This is what bhakti is about. Yes, Krishna is all powerful. Yes, all the great things in this world are but a spark of his splendor. But on the path of Gaudiya Vaishnava Bhakti, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us that the ultimate power of God is God's beauty, God's compassion, God's love, God's sweetness, God's pastimes. All attractive. And in that state, the only thing really to fear is to forget Krishna. Like that fruit seller in Vrindavan. She came and called out. She was, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, she was a woman who lived in the jungle. She had absolutely no education, no social standing, no wealth. She was just someone who wasn't even suited to live in a village. She was just a jungle dweller. And she came to Gokul with some fruits that she had picked. Called out, does anyone want to buy some fruits? And Krishna came running with some grains. And by his own mystical lila, as a little boy, all the grains fell out. And by the time he came to her, there was only one or two little grains of wheat in her hand, which are worth nothing materially. And he said, here, give me fruits. And she was so charmed by his beauty, by his sweetness, by his innocence, by his love. She surrendered the best of her fruits to Krishna. And with the fruit, she surrendered her heart. He didn't reveal to her the universal form. Krishna, I'll give you everything. Krishna showed the universal form for some people, where there were many, many heads and many, many arms, and there were flames pouring out of the mouths, and she saw the greatest soul and seeing the greatest soldiers getting devoured by the universal form of time. No, he was just a little boy smiling. So beautiful, so sweet, so kind, just giving her a grain of wheat. And he melted her heart by his sweetness, by his charm. Have my heart. Have all the fruits you want. And she turned around and her basket was full of jewels. But that basket full of jewels is representative of the basket of her heart was now full of the jewels of Prema Bhakti, the Purusharta Shiromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life. She attained the ultimate perfection of spiritual ecstasy of love of God. Attracted by Krishna's kindness, beauty, his love. And it is that that Srila Prabhupada traveled around the world. He came on the Jaladuta to give that. And his first airplane ride was Mukunda Maharaj and Janaki Devi. They went to San Francisco and invited Prabhupada to come there. Because the two capitals of the counterculture in America and in the world in those days, the supreme capital was Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco. And the next place was the Lower East Side of New York. He already started a little tiny storefront in the Lower East Side, and Mukunda Maharaj wanted him to come to San Francisco. So he and Janaki Devi, they drove there. They met their old friends, Shamsundar, Prabhu and Malati and Jamuna and Gurudas, and they all came together and invited Prabhupada. They had nothing. But they sent Prabhupada an airline ticket. Can you imagine? This was 1967. He was 72 years old, and he was on his first airplane trip in his life. And he was looking down and seeing how these big houses and big churches look like little dots from the sky. When we think we're very great, and we look down from an airplane, we understand how insignificant we really are. When Srila Prabhupada arrived in San Francisco, they greeted him and just gave him a little apartment to live in. And Janaki Devi was telling me that they had her and Mukunda Maharaj at the time, they had a cat, a big cat. And that cat really loved Prabhupada. And in India, you know, and especially in those days, people didn't keep animals in their houses. You know, they were loving and kind to all animals, but they don't live with them. That's just not the tradition. This cat, when Prabhupada would go to take a bath, the cat would be in the bathtub. when Prabhupada would go to sleep, the cat would be where he would sleep. The cat would just love Prabhupada. Any way he would sneak into Prabhupada's room. Sometimes Prabhupada would be sitting and the cat would start licking his feet. And Prabhupada was very kind to the cat. He would call Janaki, Janaki, very kindly, very patiently say, Janaki, your cat is here. And she'd come right, oh, and take the cat away and put the cat in. And a couple hours later, Janaki, your cat is here. He'd be cooking and the cat would come and start looking at everything and trying to eat it. Janaki, your cat is here. He was so kind, so patient, so respectful. And I know it's time to end because I know you're all hungry for prasad. But just a couple of weeks ago, I was with Shamsundar Prabhu, and he's writing a book about Srila Prabhupada, about his days with Prabhupada. And he had just interviewed one of his very old best friends, Shamsundar. His name is Rock Scully. And Shamsundar Prabhu, I believe in 1962, was roommates with him in Geneva, Switzerland. They went to college together. And if you have some private time, there's some fascinating, inconceivable secret stories I can tell you. But since there's not much time and we're on videotape, I will not tell them today. But interestingly, when Shamsundar was this Rock Scully, he was one of the first people of the counterculture to buy a house in Haight-Ashbury. He kind of helped start the whole scene there in the early 60s. And he called a band to live there with him. And he became the manager of the band. Later on, that band became known as the Grateful Dead. And in 1967, Haight-Ashbury was at its peak of influencing America and the world. That was the culmination year, the Summer of Love. That was the year Prabhupada was there. And Rock Scully was telling Shamsundar with great emotion, he said, so many yogis, so many gurus, so many sages and babas were coming to Haight-Ashbury. But Srila Prabhupada was the only one who was one of us. He was one of us. Now, what does that mean? Ashbury was the capital of the world for LSD and hashish and magic mushrooms and mescaline and marijuana and free sex with everything and anything and rock and roll and, you know, people living in the streets and, you know, taking a bath with some ancient ritual. And yet, they were thinking, he's one of us. He was, from the perspective of his living habits, his lifestyle, his values, his ethics, his morality, everything about him was totally opposite. But they said he was one of us. He was part of the family. Because they felt Prabhupada loved them so much, and they loved him. And he was, even though he was chanting japa and performing puja and translating Srimad Bhagavatam and doing all pure saintly things, he was living in a little flat like them. He was the saint that lived among them. And he was never judgmental. He loved them and they loved him. He was an integral part of the whole scene at the peak of Haight-Ashbury. Even the Hell's Angels considered Swamiji's one of us. The most peaceful, loving man. Karuna Center. It is an ocean of kindness. Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, all of our acharyas, they are inviting us to be a part of this beautiful pastime of compassion. That is our good fortune. The holy name of Krishna is the most powerful weapon that kills the demoniac tendencies within our heart. Not in a way like the Sudarshan Chakra when it would kill demoniac tendencies, it would be all kinds of blood and limbs all over the place. But Lord Chaitanya, with the weapon of the holy name, we're all smiling and laughing and dancing as this, as the anarthas, the unwanted things, are being removed from our hearts. It is important that we create our communities around this principle, the principle of care, selfless service, compassion, the principle of inspire each other in this spirit to take shelter of the holy names, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the worshipable deity. That is how Lord Chaitanya taught. That is how Srila Prabhupada taught. There are rules and regulations. Kadambakanana Maharaj was speaking this yesterday, but within the confines, within those rules and regulations, there is such love, such sweetness of community among devotees, and such appreciation for each other's creative wishes to serve, that following the rules and regulations is a detail. Because there's so much beauty in what we have. That's the way Srila Prabhupada created our society. Happy devotees. If we don't have that happiness that we're creating, generating amongst each other, then the rules and regulations become very insurmountable and oppressive. That is the responsibility of the devotees, to create that environment among ourselves, to care, to respect, to encourage, to appreciate. That's how Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya was, that's how Prabhupada was. Sometimes we hear about how Prabhupada was like a thunderbolt. He was also like a rose. He was so much like a rose that even when the thunderbolt came, it felt so nice. And I'm very grateful to be with His Holiness Sachinanda Swami Maharaj, who really holds up the banner of this loving exchanges. And my very dear beloved senior god sister, Dina Sharana Devi, who is presiding over this occasion on the back of the temple. My dear godbrother, Chakravarti Prabhu. We served through many inconceivable times together, which are too inconceivable to discuss tonight. These are people who Dina Sharana Devi, Sachinanda Maharaj, Chakravarti Prabhu, so many other devotees, especially they are present here. They were so deeply moved and touched and transformed by that ocean of mercy. They've given their lives, even despite so many obstacles and difficulties, to share with the world. Whenever I see Her Grace Dina Sharana Devi, I want to dance in happiness, and I want to cry in pain. Dance in happiness because she's such an exemplary, dedicated devotee, and cry in pain because she's inherited so many problems that she had nothing to do with. And yet, who in the world would want to stay and do this kind of stuff? Huh? Debts and social devastation, and yet, what practically nobody else on the planet wants to do, she's here doing. Personally, I deeply appreciate it. I just can't even believe it. And she never talks about giving up. Almost every time I see her, she's crying about all that she's trying to deal with. But behind her cry, there's a bliss that she knows Prabhupada's pleased with her and she's happy to do it. What a beautiful lesson. His Holiness Sachinanda Maharaj, whatever happens in this planet, either to him, or to us, or to everyone else, he's still smiling, and still dancing in ecstasy, sharing his love for Krishna and the holy names. So there's different kind of people, and all different kinds of people, when we work together for the higher principle, we could do wonderful things. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi. Would you like to speak something, Mama?
Perfect. think I have a mic.
Adanak Maharaj ki.
Hare Krishna. Adanak Maharaj told us about compassion and mercy. Indeed, I used the example from Srila Prabhupada's life, who came against all obstacles to the best and there acted in a very, let us say, compassionate and caring and loving way, but in the same time kept his amazing principles alive. I just can see him coming to the American supermarket and starting to negotiate with the person who wants his money, because that's done in Vrindavan, or no fixed prices. I thought of another pastime which Giriraj Maharaj revealed regarding Srila Prabhupada's compassion on one side and his absolute spirituality on another side, his almost, let us say, amazing upkeep of spiritual principles. It was in San Francisco, Giriraj Maharaj told us, that one Gujarati lady who was not married at that time, it was a student at the university, nearby university, met Srila Prabhupada, and she felt very happy because now there was someone with whom she could talk in Hindi. So she would talk with Srila Prabhupada and cook also for him or help him in the kitchen, and enjoy to just be together with Srila Prabhupada as a countryman who spoke the same language. I mean, there's Gujarati, but every Indian, if he's educated, will be able to communicate in Hindi. So one day, when she had done her duties, she had maybe cut the vegetables or done something, I don't know exactly what. She said to Prabhupada she wanted to go to the department shop. Now you must know, in India there are no department shops. That means shops like we have here in Germany, Karsten and Horten. There's Karstadt and Horten. In America, I think Woolworth is there. The department store is where you can buy everything, vegetables and non-vegetables and pots and TV and toys and bedding and mattresses, everything which is there to buy, you can buy it in the department store. So in India this is not there. There is a store which sells vegetables, a store which sells cloth, a store which sells fruit juice, and usually they are even in this in parts of the town. There's a town for the cloth, there's a town part for the cloth sellers, there's a street for the fruit people, and so on. So she just was curious to see everything assembled in one universe, in one place, so to say, and said to Prabhupada, "Today I want to visit a department store." "No, don't do it," said Prabhupada. So she was very friendly with Swamiji and really cared for his opinion. She considered him like her father, maybe. And again she said, no, I just want to see, it's America, and we want to see a little from America." "No, don't go to the store. Now she was thinking, I have? I mean, I'm just going innocently to the store. No, I just see all the things and just quickly go and come back. No. When you look at Maya, you will become attached. And when you become attached, you will ruin another lifetime. Therefore, don't go. Now, she was a young person. She went anyways. And 20 years, or maybe it's now, it's already 30 years or 40 years later, she met devotees and she told this anecdote. And she also said, now I wish I would not have kept on. I went, you understand it's a principle, and I went further and I went further and I became entangled. I married someone and I divorced him because I was attracted by the external features, and now I'm knowing the wisdom of what Swamiji told me. Don't look at Maya so that you don't become attached. So here you see compassion, but not the type of compassion which is without wisdom. Here you see kindness, but not the kindness which is not based on knowledge. You see a spiritual type of compassion and kindness, which was doubly endearing. It was endearing because he was so personal and he really loved people and cared for people, and they felt it, and it was a free, I think when we say free love in English, we mean something else. It was an affection which left space for everyone to do what they wanted to do, ultimately. But it was an affection carried by such deep spiritual realization, so that I'm sure that this lady who cooked for Srila Prabhupada, cutting the vegetables and talked with him, now she has, by this association, she has learned her lessons, whatever was her lessons to learn, and she says, I want to follow Swamiji. Thought to tell this. To give pleasure to your heart. Giriraj Maharaj told the exact story, and you might like to ask him for further details. It's a wonderful story. Yes, so our ocean of compassion, something which I have found out in my own life. Obviously, we all like to be objects of compassion. We all like to be to receive compassion. We all like to get love and feel love. But and I think if we take this Yajñavalkya Samhita, actually it's the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, and there is a story series. We know that the two human needs are to give love and to receive love. So everyone wants to receive love very much. It's a need. It's more necessary for us to be loved and to receive love than to receive sabjis and food and so on. But there's a secret. If you want to receive love, you can also learn to become a giver of love. I personally believe that is one of the secrets of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. He is a giver of love. He's a great giver. He's a distributor. He has a department store of love in his heart. And he gives it in the way the people who come to him needed, you know. He's a walking department store of love. There for some are pots of love, for the others he has cushions of love, for the others he has vegetables of love, many varieties of love, in other words, caring love, I know some of his disciples also know the flashing bolt love, flash from the sky. Different types of love. And I think we all love him because he has learned to become a giver of love. If you want care and attention and love, it's good to, if you live on an island like most of us Westerners, and no one can reach you, then learn to give love and care or affection, and you will see something comes back. And our Maharaji is at least my example of giving love. And we really appreciate that you came in your, from your international travels, where you are surrounded with 5,000 people. I have heard when Maharaj went to South India, imagine this, they did a pilgrimage and they had 5,000 devotees with them. And this was a difficulty because when they wanted to cross the bridge for Rameshwaram, I believe, these bridges can only hold small buses who can only have 35 passengers. So Maharaj had to arrange his group.
Radha
Kund Prabhu had to arrange. Please let us look at Radha Kund. Please move, get up, Radha Kundji. We want to see your happy smile. We had to get as many small buses so that 5,000 people fit in.
210 buses.
210 buses. We had to arrange small buses. This is a luxury in India. Usually, if you have buses where 5,000, where 100 people or 200 people and 50 on top, you know. But no, this is a special thing. So Maharaj is surrounded with oceans of people to whom he preaches, and still, to give us his affectionate glance, he has come to an insignificant Germany. He once translated Germany as many germs. He has come. So I think what we should do is we should conclude this little event by just briefly doing a briefly kirtan. Brief kirtan. Is that a good idea in your opinion?
Vivo!
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Just briefly chanting together. This is what devotees do very well. And then we will take prasadam.